Hi, this is Connie Barlow.
And Michael Dowd.
And we are doing our fourth podcast from South Whidbey Island. Last time Michael mentioned, in fact, our topic last time was death, in that Michael received a sobering possibility of, a real serious illness in terms of the tumor that's been found in his spleen. We're recording this right after we recorded podcast three. In part, we don't know when we'll be able to record next. And also, the theme I want to discuss today is something that, had this diagnosis not come up, it would have been our third podcast. I'm taking the lead in this one today, as Michael took the lead in the one that was just prior to this. And it's really on one of the topics that Michael and I talk about to audiences, and in my case, of all age groups, that causes the most sense of evolution has practical good news for me, that this evolutionary perspective is not just something that spiritually feels good or gives me an awe of the universe or makes me feel religious in some way, but it can make sense of my life. It can have me look at my past, the transgressions in my past, the difficulties in my past and the present, and see them in a new light, see them in a light in which I have compassion for myself and compassion for others. And what this means is often dealing with very difficult topics, the kinds of things that we're not usually willing to talk about. And it's here that an understanding that our brains evolved rather than were designed for the kind of civilizations we live in today can really make a contribution. And Michael, you've had a lot of experience of awakenings to that too in your talks.
Yeah, the last 3 years or so, maybe 4 years, we've been speaking a lot about evolutionary psychology and evolutionary brain science and how our best science has been able to realize, that is, make real in an undeniable way what could only previously be talked about in a mythic, belief-based way. So that, you know, traditions such as the Western tradition talks about the fall of Adam and Eve and original sin. And these, of course, are night language. They're mythic or poetic ways of pointing to deep intuitions that are pointing to what we do know about the human condition that we can now speak about in a natural, factual, day language way, which is that we all have an unchosen nature. We all have inherited proclivities. We have aspects of ourselves that we didn't choose. We just find ourselves this way because it makes really, really good evolutionary sense that we are this way, such as the fact that we all have cravings for sugar, salts, and fats, because for 99% of human history, it wasn't easy to find sugar, salts, and fats. So having a craving for these things allowed our ancestors to survive long enough to reproduce. Yet today, we live in a world where it's very easy to find sugar, salts, and fats, yet we still have these cravings. In other words, there's a mismatch between our instincts for sugar, salts, and fats and the world that we today have to live in. And that mismatch can cause some challenges. One of the things we know about testosterone is that the higher the testosterone in men and women both, the more the risk-taking occurs, and also the more people tend to obsess about sex and think about sex. And this is true of men and women both. And when there's a rise in status, like let's say somebody gets elected to public office or becomes, you know, ordained, or they become a judge or a police officer or, you know, the manager of their store or, you know, vice president of their corporation, or in any way where there's a significant rise in status, for all men, gay and straight both, and for many, many women, almost half women, testosterone levels rise with the rise in status. So that means people are thinking more about sex and they're taking greater risks and they're not going to be usually conscious of it.
And with that, I'll segue into the current events that are prompting this particular theme for this podcast, and that is Jenny Sanford. I'm glad that I can say Jenny Sanford instead of Governor Sanford, because it's really Jenny, Governor Mark Sanford's wife, who's in the news now. And one of the headlines has been, or a blog that I've read, I keep track of this stuff, has been Jenny Sanford, role model for my daughter. Now, what's going on here is, and in fact, let me back up for a moment just in terms of my personal story in terms of why I've been following these issues. Just before Michael and I went to the Grand Canyon, in late June, we were attending a conference that Cheryl Janae organized on evolution and religion and understanding and so forth. And right at that time when we arrived, the John Ensign, U.S. Senator John Ensign, sex scandal emerged. And a week after that, the governor lost in the Appalachians, now found out that the A is not Appalachians, but Argentina, and all that's come out after it. And I was in pain. I was at that conference in pain when this second news came out. And now both of these men are Republicans. I don't happen to be a Republican, but to me, what I was looking at is, this is America. This is my country. And we are now living in an age in which private matters are no longer private, and for good reason. Senator John Ensign came forward because he was being potentially blackmailed by someone involved in the affair that he was involved in. And this is always why the public has had concern and needs to have concern about elected officials, high elected officials, ending up having affairs, because it's something that no elected official wants to have come out, and perhaps particularly if their wife doesn't know about it and their kids, certainly doesn't want to have come out in a public realm. So with these two things happening, I just started to feel, where is America going? Are we going to have any viable candidates for high office who can, number one, say, yes, I'll run, because something won't be dug up about their past? And number two, once they are running and all the temptations come, are they going to have the wherewithal to be able to stand firm against those temptations? And if they fall, how are we going to judge them as a society? How are we going to judge them? So I started to actually fret that. Now, there's a light side to it, too. Maybe we'll be running into a time when only low testosterone postmenopausal women will be viable candidates for public office. But it's a very serious thing. The turn came, though, when Jenny Sanford actually played a very different role from what any of the wives who've had to suffer this sort of public, what shouldn't be humiliation, but certainly would feel that way to them. And anger, certainly anger against their spouses for having something come public that in most situations, the children never have to find out about. And yet, if you're in a public office, they do. So what Jenny Sanford did was, she didn't cower. She didn't stand by her man. She didn't lash out at the, quote, harlot, as some others have done. But she basically went on with her life, made simple statements, talked with her kids, acknowledged that it wasn't about her, it was a situation. And here's the thing that feeds into what Michael and I do. What she talked about is, she had obviously been hearing some of the scientific understanding. If anyone wants to Google Helen Fisher and Sanford, you'll find those words together. You'll find what Helen Fisher talks about in this realm too. And that's that our evolved brains. And that our evolved brains, it's not like a single way of falling in love with someone and maintaining in love with someone, but there are very powerful, powerful chemicals in the brain beyond the lovely oxytocin that gives us closeness. And one of those powerful chemicals is this very same chemical that causes tremendous addictions, such as nicotine, which President Obama is still fighting, such as heroin. And the dopamine is what comes in for romantic attraction. And it's quite obvious, given the statements that Governor Sanford has made, that this isn't just a prostitute. This isn't just a sex, as it was with Elliot Spitzer. But this is romantic, deep romantic attraction. And that is an addiction. And to her benefit, Jenny Sanford mentioned that. She said something like, I now know that my husband is fighting something akin to an addiction. It's the same kind of a chemical addiction that comes about with addiction to alcohol, addiction to porn. And she says, I know he has a tough time breaking away from that addiction. So on the one hand, she's feeling her feelings, trying to protect her kids. When that's no longer possible, being straightforward about it, talking straightforward with her kids, leaving open the possibility of reconciling with her husband, but not feeling that kind of humiliation where she can't stand tall in public. And so she really is setting a role model for all of us.
As a man, one of the things that I am consistently reminded of whenever there's a new sex scandal politically is the fact that evolution is giving us a far, in other words, let me back up, trying to understand this stuff without an evolutionary worldview, that is trying to understand this stuff simply through old traditional mythic ways, you know, that it's my sinful nature, or it's our sinful nature, or, you know, or the devil's tempting, or whatever. These are mythic understandings that served in their day, but don't serve us today nearly as well as having an understanding grounded in our best science, our best sciences, around evolutionary psychology and evolutionary brain science. And I can say this from my own personal experience. I mean, I betrayed my first wife, and that's one of the reasons why she divorced me and ultimately went with somebody who she felt was a better fit for her than I was. I betrayed Connie early in our marriage, and I was not conscious of my own unchosen nature. I didn't have an evolutionary understanding of my brain. I didn't understand that the more visible I become in the world, the more people are admiring me or in some way looking up to me or in some way talking about me, the more I'm in the media, the higher my testosterone levels go. I didn't understand any of that stuff. And I also didn't understand the necessity, or at least the good sense, that having a few others that are that you can be authentic, that you can be transparent, that you can be real with. And of course, this has made all the difference for myself. You know, now that I understand my brain, I understand that, for example, whenever I'm away from Connie for even as little as 2 or 3 days, my sperm count is going to double. That's what happens for men. When they're away from their primary partner, their sperm count doubles. And this is true for all men. And so knowing this about my nature, I now know that no matter how great my relationship is with Connie, and it's fabulous at all levels, I also know that integrity is not a solo, or integrity is not a solo sport. It's a team sport, and we need each other. And so, for example, as I think I've talked a lot about in some of my programs, when I was away a year ago, when I was away from Connie for 5 days, I went to Hawaii for 5 days, and even though I wasn't afraid of being out of integrity at all, nonetheless, there were 4 men in my life that I called up or I emailed and I said, hey, I'm going to be away from Connie for the next 5 days and I'm committed to being in impeccable integrity. So I'm going to let you know on Monday when I come back, on a scale of 0 to 10, 0 meaning I was wildly flirtatious, 10 meaning I was impeccably integrous, I'm going to let you know where I was at. And by having that level of support and accountability, it made it effortless. There was no challenge whatsoever. Now, there might not have been any challenge anyway, but nonetheless, I feel supported by others who are committed to my integrity as I'm committed to their integrity, and not just sexual integrity, but integrity at all levels.
I've got a story in this regard. The church camp that Michael and I were theme speakers for a week recently in early, I guess it was early August, early this month, one of the topics that I wanted to bring up in regard to evolutionary brain science, and particularly to call a separate, just spontaneous women's meeting for any women that wanted to get together when, was the I word, infidelity. And it just is remarkable to me to watch the faces, men and women both, when that word is mentioned. I view that topic to be in the same realm as the M word was for women. When I was just in college and coming out of college, and that was menopause. The women of the previous generation just would not talk about it. And yet our generation, postmenopausal women like me, man, we're talking about flashing all the time. It's changed. We have an objective view of it. And that's the thing. With evolutionary brain science, what it's given me is an ability to be able to recognize what's going on, not feel it any differently, but being able to step aside for a moment and understand it in an objective way as well. And so this understanding with infidelity and what it means, I think, can be supremely important. I remember at the women's meeting, we were all willing to talk about what do we tell our daughters these days about sexuality and particularly some of these scandals going on. What do we say? Everyone was willing to talk about that. What do we talk about the hookup culture? How have things changed from the 70s? What do we understand now that we didn't understand in the 70s? What is this new form of feminism that we're feeling? What do we tell our daughters? But nobody wanted to talk about infidelity. There was one young woman married who had the comment, and I think it was probably, for young women who haven't experienced it on one side or the other yet, It's like, well, you know, we have commitments. That's all we need, commitments. End of story, end of discussion. Well, we look at marriages like Governor Sanford and Jenny, where everyone, including the wives, Elizabeth Edwards with John Edwards, nobody would have thought the wives were completely, completely feeling that their husbands would be in integrity, caught off guard. And the way I like to put it is that one of the main things that needs to be acknowledged for these women, first of all, whenever I read about these political sex scandals with Elliot Spitzer and his wife, and then Elizabeth Edwards, and just the details and hearing about when John Edwards was telling her for the first time, and certainly not being truthful, even in that instance, she went and she vomited. Now, that is not unusual. There's a movie that came out, I think it was in the 1970s, with Jill Klaber, called An Unmarried Woman, and that's precisely what she did. And what I've been telling people, I say, when someone finds out that someone they love is dead or dying, as I found out that my husband might be terminally, I mean, who knows, ill this past, you don't go and vomit. It's a very different thing. In fact, when I was telling my sister has been my confidant throughout my marriage, and she asked me, she said, well, how can you speak about this? How can you, I mean, your husband might be dying. And I said, Betsy, I said, my husband has already died twice in front of my eyes. And she knew what I was saying. It's what happened to Elizabeth Edwards. It's what happened to Jenny Senford when she saw the letter in the correspondence with his Argentinian lover. Your husband has instantly died. There's an imposter standing before you. And at least with a death such as if Michael were to die now, we're completely back to love, respect that is possible, totally mission partners, all of that again. If he were to die, I could feel all those good feelings of richness and grief, calling up memories of great times, crying tears, loving myself, feeling myself in a wonderful position. But right now, Jenny Sanford, Elizabeth Edwards, what they have to feel are becoming people they don't want to become. Jenny's the first one who's been able to step beyond that. But any woman who's had to face it, and where it's not been kept a secret, just something within the family, and that maybe you tell your confidant, but it's out there in public, there are feelings that come up within them that they don't want to feel and they're not proud of, and yet they come. And so again, I think what we need to understand is that this is very serious. It is the most serious thing. And women should no longer have to bear it in secret. It should no longer be something that we don't discuss, but we need to recognize that when it happens, it is the death of a spouse, and it's a long ways back from there.
In my evening programs, the component that I do on evolutionary psychology and evolutionary brain science, I show a picture of Ted Haggard, who, you know, a couple years ago, president of the National Evangelical Association and a megachurch pastor. It was, you know, came out that he was seeing a gay massage therapist, and it turns out now another guy on the side. And then, of course, our nation was obsessed for a year over President Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. And then before that, of course, there were Jimmy Swaggart and Jimmy Baker, these televangelists that fell victim to sexual scandal. And, you know, and I remember reading a book review of a book that was written on the sex lives of American presidents. And, you know, you just don't want to know this stuff. And yet, having an evolutionary understanding of our brains does give us a deep insight that couldn't have been known before. For example, just the shift from judging ourselves for having these temptations, these inclinations, these urgings to get out of integrity, to be out of integrity, to do things that break our vows or in some way cause us to violate our word. These things caused our ancestors to survive long enough to reproduce. And so having some gratitude, having deep gratitude for myself for those inclinations has paradoxically virtually evaporated their power over me. Whereas before, I mean, I don't know of any Christian that is genuinely thankful for their quote unquote sinful nature. I just don't know of it. They all resent it, or they resist it, or it's just a consequences of the fall of whatever. And now those things that I used to call my sinful nature, I now call my instincts, my unchosen nature, and I now have gratitude for those things, genuine gratitude. And consequently, their power over me is like 1/10 or 1/100 of what they used to be.
Michael and I both view this perspective as being so practically useful, including for the recovery movement, because whether it's dealing with a sexual addiction or an emotional infatuation or a drug addiction, whatever it is, the very, very first place evolution takes you to is, number one, appreciation. Appreciation that these instincts do exist. You would not be here without it. They served your ancestors in some form or capacity. It helps us move out of denial. But there's also, I often find when I'm talking about this, I'll be looking around the room, I'll do a guest sermon on brain science, and I'm always bringing this stuff up, and I'll have these shocked looks on women's faces around the room. But the point is that even though we can say it's not your fault, it's not his fault, but it is his responsibility. That's what we all bear. And I know that one of the places I go to is, thank goodness I don't have the level of testosterone that men have. I mean, men have, when you look at it percentage-wise, 4,000% more testosterone.
The typical man has 40 to 60 times the testosterone that women do.
So that's 4,000%. I mean, when we're used to medical studies, if someone, you know, if there's like a 30% gain in something, we go, wow, that's incredible. This is 4,000%. And yet there's also something on the side too called emotional infidelity. And many of us women have felt that too, where even though we're not engaging in anything, quote, wrong, there is an emotional side that goes into it that can be just as debilitating for a marriage and just as deceptive in a cover-up if it's not dealt with in some way. And that may mean change of circumstances. It may mean it's time to have a divorce or time to break up. But these are the kinds of things that we don't have to leave in the closet anymore, that they affect us all in one way or another.
One of the stories that I tell in my evening program is related to a man. Actually, the New York Times Magazine, when the New York Times Magazine did a feature article on my book last summer, they interviewed this guy who's 80 years old. He came to my program in northern Florida, and he came up to me after the sermon where I had talked about evolutionary brain science, and he was practically vibrating. He was so excited. He said, Michael, I've got to tell you something I've never told anybody. Well, I don't know about you, but when somebody who's 80 years old is going to tell me something they've never told anybody, I'm all ears. So I was like, please tell me. He said, you just helped me make sense of something that I never knew how to make sense of before. He said, In 1973, I was the vice president of my corporation. That turns out this was a huge corporation. He became vice president. So this was a major rise in status. He said, I had no idea until your sermon why my life began unraveling almost immediately. He said, I had been married for 13 years. I had never betrayed my wife. In fact, I had never been seriously tempted. He said, within 6 months of my promotion, he said, I had 5 affairs. None of them knew about each other. My wife didn't know about any of them. He said, it ultimately cost me my marriage. It cost me my job. And he said, I've been living with the guilt and the shame of this for 35 years. He said, I haven't told anybody until I'm telling you right now. I mean, you know, can you imagine how free this guy felt? And the amazing thing was, is he was telling me loud enough that about a half a dozen of his parishioner friends could hear it. I mean, the shame was gone. In fact, he told me, he said, it feels like I can let go of the boatloads of self-judgment and guilt and start cleaning up the messes in my life. And to his credit, he did. Between Sunday morning, which is when I did the sermon, and Tuesday night, which is when I did the evening follow-up program, he called his ex-wife. He told me, he said, I was in tears. He said, I apologized for being such a deceptive, lying sack, came back to integrity. And I found out a couple months later from his roommate that his depression of the last 15 years had lifted. He wasn't even on the medication anymore. So he was coming back to integrity. To use Christian Knight language, he was coming back to Christ. He was coming back to integrity. Now, he wasn't a Christian. He was a humanist. But he did tell me, he said, it feels like I've had a born-again experience. He said, it feels like I've got a new lease on life, and here I am 81 years old.
Michael and I, in telling our programs about evolutionary brain science, and in my case, I often do them. In fact, the last two sermons I've given here in the Pacific Northwest have both been on evolutionary brain science, one of which is now you can listen to in audio on the greatstory.org website. Just go to the What's New page and look down for Your Brain's Creation Story. But what you might also want to look up is Michael and I have just extraordinary stories of people coming up to us, and once they get this perspective, maybe in a 20-minute sermon, maybe in the half-hour component in Michael's evening program, but once they get this perspective, there's a shift. It makes a difference in how they view their lives. And so I have a whole webpage that I've designed now called Stories of Awakening. Stories of Awakening. All you have to do is Google Stories of Awakening, and you'll find ours is the number 2 item on Google. And it'll take you to a page where you can choose all the various aspects of the universe story, from We Are Made of Stardust to Death Through Deep Time Eyes to this Your Brain's Creation story, where people over the 7.5 years are being on the road have told us their stories.
It's basically their testimonials. Of how their life has been transformed in one way or another, or how their relationships have been transformed by coming to a deeply meaningful, inspiring, you could say sacred understanding of evolution.
Yeah, so check that out if you'd like. And I'd like to end this podcast with Michael and I reading the blog that we wrote when we were at that conference in California, and we were actually writing it as an op-ed piece on the Governor Sanford and Ensign scandal. And now here's the good news. We have a publicist who was putting it out to the top papers, the LA Times, the New York Times, on a select basis. And he said the good news is that they actually responded with the New York Times said, give us more than 24 hours. Give us 48 hours. We'd really like to evaluate this. Well, we got to know, but we'll read for you here what the New York Times missed reporting on. And the title is
Sex Scandals and Instincts, It's Your Biology, Stupid.
And Michael, where does that come from? It's Your Biology, Stupid.
Bill Clinton, when he was campaigning for president, it's the economy, stupid.
Oh, right.
As sort of his main slogan that he kept reminding himself to come back to, it's the economy, stupid. So It's Your Biology, Stupid is just a humorous play on that.
Okay.
We are losing our political leaders and will continue to lose them until we come to terms with our basic biology.
Leaders today are no more susceptible to violations of marital vows than were leaders of the past. But in this era of tabloids and texting, sexual scandals have become epidemic.
Every political victory puts the winner in a position not only of privilege and responsibility, but also of sacrifice. Just as voters would be wise to withhold their vote from any candidate who lacks a basic understanding of the economy, so should we be wary of electing any man who is ignorant of his biological instincts.
Foremost, he must know about testosterone, what testosterone does, and how a rise in status elevates this hormone and thus intensifies one's sex drive and willingness to take risks.
We can assume that Governors Sanford and Spitzer both knew that testosterone is the sex hormone. We can also assume that Senators Ensign, Edwards, and Craig knew that the more testosterone one has, the more insistent the sex drive. What most politicians don't know, however, are 5 scientific discoveries that provide crucial perspective.
First, the average adult male has 30 to 50 times the testosterone of an average female. Translated, the sex drive and willingness to engage in risky activities is usually exceedingly more compelling for men than for women.
Second, politicians are not average men. They are high-status men. The body responds to elevation in social position by boosting the levels of testosterone.
Third, most women instinctively become flirtatious around high-status men. We are all descendants of great-great-great-grandmothers whose offspring were fed and protected during the worst famines and calamities, thanks to this instinct.
Fourth, dalliance-free monogamy does not have an exemplary track record in any cultural tradition, nor among our primate kin. Only recently have political leaders in America been watched and outed for such transgressions.
Fifth, when the sexual drive butts up against culturally forged values and commitments, judgment may be hijacked. Rational argument morphs into rationalization, and the deceiver becomes self-deceived.
There are 2 primary ways to make sense of how these 5 biological facts play out in today's leaders. One way is via the religious worldview inherent in the apologies expressed by the 2 most recent political casualties. Both Senator Ensign and Governor Sanford spoke of their, quote, sinful nature, unquote.
The other way is via science. We're evolved creatures, designed naturally over millions of years. Our brain contains vestiges of the past that are not only powerful, but mismatched with the needs and norms of the present.
The evolutionary view is our only way forward. Pointing to original sin as the cause of today's sex scandals, while mythically accurate, is ultimately no more helpful than explaining tsunamis as the wrath of Poseidon.
You want family values? Try out a sacred evolutionary worldview. Appreciating our instincts for how they served our ancestors is the crucial first step for moving beyond secrecy, denial, and condemnation, and towards structures of support that offer real hope for living in integrity.
We as a nation have an opportunity to move out of denial before hitting bottom. We don't have to wait for a score more elected officials to fall by the wayward side. If men in American politics don't get a grip on their evolved nature, then the only viable candidates will be postmenopausal women. We can make this transition now by taking these two steps.
1. Embrace our evolutionary heritage and open our minds to learning the actual origins and consequences of our innate biological gifts and challenges.
And 2, put in place systems of support, openly and with a blend of seriousness and lighthearted humor. Integrity, after all, is not a solo sport. It is time for high testosterone elected officials to come out of the closet. It is time for reporters to support them in their sexual sobriety by posing this question at every press conference. Sir, did you meet with your integrity group this week?
And with that, signing off from South Whidbey Island, this is Connie Barlow.
And Michael Dowd.